welcome to the podcast. This is episode 8 of season 5 of Victims of Fun. I'm your host, El Stevo. I want to welcome you to the podcast this week. Remember, we're available on Spotify, iHeart, Pandora, and any other fine podcast broadcasting platforms. Remember, you can mail me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. And as usual, Victims of Fun would like to thank the Blue Microphone Company, because our microphone is a Blue Snowball, the Seagate Corporation, the Solid State External Drive that holds the entire podcast and all the previous episodes is by Seagate. And of course, this podcast is made on an Apple AirBook M1, nice gold one with a snail sticker I put on it, because most of you, or maybe some of you know, I have pet snails, aquatic snails that live in the water, and I'm kind of into the whole snail thing, and they're very easy to maintain, very good little pets, and they have their own personalities, and you know, I got a couple in a tank, and I have a betta fish to keep him company named Mr. Grumpy, and there they are. So I turned 53 this week. 53 years old. Yeehaw. I was born in 1968. And it's been a very interesting 53 years. I've been a lot of places and done a lot of things that somebody in my social status usually never gets to do. I've been punching above my weight my entire life as far as the people I've met, the people I've been with, the things I've done, the places I've seen, the opportunities I've had. I've been very blessed. Lived in different countries. Know a couple famous people. Know a very, 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 very famous A-list Oscar-winning actress whose name I keep secret, that we're very good friends. Been with a lot of very beautiful women who I'm just lucked out. They all like my sense of humor. Supposedly I'm funny. And, you know, I was blessed to have two very good parents, one of whom is still alive, and a very big Italian family. And it's been all good. You know, there's always a couple regrets. You know, people I should have treated nicer, people I should have been with, things I should have done differently than what I actually did. But, you know, that's life. It's, and there's no point really in feeling regret, because until they invent a time machine, you can't really go back and change anything. And even if you could, I mean, if you go by the MCU, you know, it just creates an alternate timeline. Like, your entire life could be the same, but instead of scratching your head with your right hand, you scratch it with your left, and then that branches out into a completely different timeline. And it does that for every person that's ever lived on the planet, so there are like infinite timelines all running next to each other, supposedly. That's the theory anyway. And then if you can jump between the timelines, you could pretty much go anywhere. That's the theory. That's like the multiverse theory, but that's also the time travel theory, that you can jump from one line to another, which makes no sense to me, because what's the space between the timelines? Like, what is that? Is that nothing? Because nothing can't exist. There always has to be something. So nothing, by definition, is actually something, which means it's not nothing, and that creates a paradox. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, if I had a time machine, I'd probably go back and I don't know. You see, I always thought that if time travel is possible, like if you go in the past, you couldn't go back before you were born. So, like, if I had a time machine, I could get in the time machine, and I could go back to no further than June 22nd, 1968. That's as far back as I could go. Couldn't go back a day earlier. So anybody that thinks they can go back in time to see dinosaurs and stuff, it's not going to happen. I mean, the oldest person on the planet is like 115. So you're looking at, you know, not even back to like the Civil War or anything. Nobody can do that anymore. Supposedly. But I mean, I guess you could build a robot and send the robot back. And then they could record dinosaurs. You know, I read this thing online. And I've seen it in a couple sci-fi shows that, because of the speed of light. And in these shows, like, the ship they were in was faster than light. And I remember one where there was some disaster and the planet was pretty, like, almost destroyed. And it had happened in their timeline 6 years previously. So they're on this ship that's going, you know, that can jump through space, like hyperspace or something. And they're 9 light years away from Earth. And they turn on their telescopes, and the whole crew of the ship is looking at Earth, and Earth looks beautiful and perfect. And the captain says, "This is Earth 9 years ago, because the light has taken 9 years to get to this point. And this is the Earth we want to fix, which is why we're on our space journey." And I remember reading, because that jogged a memory, it's something I'd read online, that, you know, the further out you go, that's what you will see. So if you're 500 light years from Earth, and you have a powerful enough telescope, you could see Earth as it existed 500 years in the past. And if you had a strong enough telescope, you could zoom in on individual people and stuff on the planet 500 years ago and see what they were doing. Because you're looking at the light from 500 years ago. The problem is, the farther out you go, the bigger the telescope has to be. And then I remember, because it was a Q&A thing. It wasn't Reddit, it was somewhere else. And somebody had asked the guy who was conducting this Q&A, well, how far would you have to go out? And how big would the telescope have to be if you want to see dinosaurs? And he did some calculations as he was, you know, he had his assistant do some calculations, because apparently it took like 20 minutes to figure it out. Then he answered the question. He said, well, if we did the math correctly, he said, and I think we did, he said, if you want to see like Tyrannosaurus Rexes running around, you would have to be, you know, a few million or whatever light years away from Earth, because the dinosaurs lived 100 million, 200 million years ago. So you'd have to be that far out. And he said, no, because light dissipates as it travels, you're looking at, like, he said something about one photon of light per something billion miles. He said you would need a telescope that was about the width of half of the Milky Way galaxy to be able to zoom in to see dinosaurs. So, I don't think we're ever gonna see dinosaurs. But, you know, they want to clone them. I mean, they did find, they've been, you know, dinosaur fossils and stuff, like dinosaur bones, and the bones fossilize, and they turn into rock. Okay? And recently, in the past few years, it was quite by accident. They broke open a T-Rex fossil bone by accident. They dropped it or something. And inside was fibrous material. And they're like, what the hell is this? And they're thinking, well, maybe it's some sort of bacteria, but they didn't know what it was. So, you know, quickly they quarantined the bone and they, you know, studied this fibrous elastic material that was inside the fossil. And it was soft tissue from a T-Rex. And they said this has never been seen before. They didn't think that soft tissue could survive, you know, hundreds of millions of years. And they were able to extract pieces of T-Rex DNA. Because now they know for certain that the closest living relative to a T-Rex is actually the modern-day chicken. That's basically the closest living thing to a T-Rex is a chicken. So every time you go into Kentucky Fried Chicken, or preferably Chick-fil-A, you're eating a T-Rex. Okay? That's how they were able to determine that. Now they're thinking, well, all these dinosaur fossils we've been finding and just, you know, mounting should we start breaking them open? Because they may have some of this stuff in there. Because they didn't just find it once. They found it a couple times. And there were some scientists like, no way, that's not soft tissue. That's bacteria. But it was proven to be T-Rex. I don't know if they were blood vessels or what they were. Yeah, they were blood vessels because there was blood. And so now they're thinking, if we get enough of this stuff, maybe we can clone a dinosaur. But they're thinking, you'd have to get a lot of bones, a lot of fossil bones, and just keep destroying them, hoping you're going to run into this soft preserved tissue. And they don't know how the tissue got preserved. They don't know what the parameters were that caused the internal tissues to not fossilize, but they said, that they proved it happened a couple times, so there's got to be more out there. And of course, then you have the argument, oh, you're destroying valuable fossils to chase something that may not be there. It's like chasing a unicorn. But they're saying, if they get enough of it, they could, see, the problem is, this is a good topic, especially for people who are interested. So Jurassic Park, blah, 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 dinosaurs running around, and the books touch on it, because Michael Crichton, rest in peace, was a very brilliant man, and he touched on this in the books, but it never got touched on in the movies, which it should be. If you were able to push a button and make a dinosaur appear, it doesn't matter what type of dinosaur, let's just say it's a safe dinosaur, not something that's going to kill you. So say you were able to push a button and a small stegosaurus shows up. Dumb planet animal. It's basically like a cow. Press a button, there it is. Right in front of you in a field. There he is. Within 15 minutes, he's going to die. Because the oxygen content when the dinosaurs lived on the planet was much, much different than the oxygen content that's in the atmosphere now. And a dinosaur would literally suffocate to death in our atmosphere. There's no two ways about it. They just would not be able to survive. You would have to keep them in a sealed, airtight, pressurized environment for them to actually live. Conversely, if a human being went back in time and stepped out of their time machine into the era of dinosaurs, they would keel over and die in about 15 minutes because of the oxygen content. You'd have to go back in a biohazard suit. And, they never touched on that in the movie, and they should, because in the book, Jurassic Park, the scientist who created the dinosaurs tells John Hammond, these aren't real dinosaurs. And John Hammond goes, what do you mean they're not real dinosaurs? They're alive. They're walking around. And the scientist says, no, they're not real dinosaurs. They are our interpretation of dinosaurs. He said, because real dinosaurs would not survive in this environment. So we've had to genetically modify them to live in our atmosphere. And he said, and as far as the behavior goes, we don't know how they really behaved because we tinkered around with their genetic makeup so much. And part of the argument in the original Jurassic Park is the scientist wanted all the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park Island to be euthanized. And he wanted to re-engineer the dinosaurs for the park. And John Hammond gets in this whole thing of, well, why? They're not, these are real dinosaurs. And he has to explain to him, no, they're not. And he said, and some of them are too aggressive and too smart and are dangerous to keep around, and we need to control them, so let me change their behaviors so the velociraptors aren't trying to kill people, and the big sauropods aren't always trying to smash things, and the T-Rexes aren't trying to kill everybody. He said, let me dumb them down so they're more docile. And John Hammond's like, no, that's not what people want to see. And the scientist says, people don't know what dinosaurs are, how they behave. They're taking our word for it. And so we can tell them this is how they behave because we don't really know. So you'll never bring back a cloned dinosaur unless you've got a really self-contained thing. Now, woolly mammoths and stuff from the Ice Age, that's 10,000 years ago. And the only difference between the Earth those 10, 15, 20,000 years ago and now is the air was a lot cleaner back then. You know, the environment was a lot cleaner. It was all pristine. I mean, the continents were all where they were. You know, there was no Pangaea. Everything was where it was supposed to be. The atmosphere was the same. You could step off your time machine and into that environment with woolly mammoths, and unless you weren't immediately killed by a saber-toothed tiger or some Neanderthal who sees you and is like, oh, what the hell is this? You'd be perfectly fine. Actually, you'd probably be healthier because the air was cleaner and you had a lot of the natural state of fruits and vegetables before we tinkered around with their evolution. So you're not going to see things like carrots and corn and watermelon because we've genetically engineered those through selective breeding. I think an actual carrot is like purple or some sort of weird thing, and watermelon's not even red. It looks like a giant kiwi, but whatever. So if they manage to clone a woolly mammoth, it could walk around and live and be like, hey, what's up? And they're actually trying to do that in Russia because, you know, the Russians will do anything. They're not... The Russians aren't hampered by some sort of government-prescribed rule or regulations like we have here for everything. If the Russians want to re-engineer and clone a woolly mammoth, there's no organization in the government or anything that's going to stop them. Where here, you need a permit just to go fishing on your own property. So they said they're actively getting ready. They actually built, and I don't know if they built it, but they set aside a couple hundred or a couple thousand square miles in Siberia. They set aside as a national park. And this is real. The Russian government did this. On the contingency of their successful in cloning these extinct woolly mammoths, and they need somewhere to live. And since Siberia is basically not changed in the since they existed, they'd be perfectly at home there. And that was the idea. And it's just they haven't... If they've managed to do it, they've kept it under wraps. Now, there were always these rumors, and there were supposed photographs that they tried, and they had a hybrid that lived for a couple weeks and then died. But, you know, they're going to keep trying. Because basically the plan is they're going to get the DNA, sequence it, or whatever they, however cloning works. And they take the egg of the closest living relative of woolly mammoth is a Indian elephant. So they take the eggs and they remove the genetic material of the Indian elephant from the Indian elephant's eggs. They put the genetic material of the woolly mammoth in the egg instead, and then the female Indian elephant has a baby woolly mammoth. And it's not a hybrid. It's an actual woolly mammoth. And the idea is they want to do that enough so they have enough eventually to have a breeding population without any issues with inbreeding, because you need a genetically diverse group of animals to avoid inbreeding. That's why if they have problems with purebred dogs, at least in this country, because, you know, instead of a purebred poodle from the street breeding with a poodle, you know, that happens to live down the road, they have these poodles that they crossbreed for different desirable traits, and sometimes they're related, and it's a small, undiverse biological thing, and that's why you have a lot of purebred dogs with, like, they go blind, they don't live as long, they have a lot of issues, and, you know, that's why you should, you're always better going to a shelter and adopting a dog anyway. Shelter dogs are the way to go. But that's what they're planning. They're gonna make an actual Jurassic Park. Well, it wouldn't be Jurassic Park, it would be, I guess, Woolly Mammoth Park, but I'd pay to see that. I wouldn't mind seeing a woolly mammoth. That would be kind of cool. But apparently this is a long-term, like, 100-year project for them, because they have to keep cloning them until they get a viable breeding population. That's the trick. I don't know how many they need. I know in human beings, you need a population of about 10,000 to avoid any inbreeding. Now, I don't know how many for woolly mammoths, but, you know, there you go. So they're going to do it. But yeah, the closest living relative of a T-Rex is a chicken. So next time you go to Chick-fil-A, ask them for a grilled T-Rex sandwich and see what they say, because that's apparently it. Now, oh, there's this thing now where they say dinosaurs have feathers and that the T-Rex was covered in feathers and looked like a giant psychotic turkey on meth. And I've seen artistic representations of what some of these scientists say T-Rex looks like, and it looks like a special needs turkey, basically. No offense, but that's what it looks like. It looks stupid. And I think that's just stupid. I think these scientists are just trying to ruin my childhood, to be perfectly honest with you. Because T-Rexes are big and scaly and have teeth and chase, and they're always trying to kill Jeff Goldblum. They don't look like chickens. I don't care what Rich Posey says. So, all right, so we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with Victims of Fun. Thank you for listening. And we're back on Victims of Fun. Hope you enjoyed that commercial. It's the same commercial I play every podcast, because I don't have enough listeners to qualify for a better one. So, there you go. So some of you may know I'm really into cryptocurrency and whatnot, and I'll tell you, it's been a bloodbath the past couple months. Everything I own is pretty much down, except Ethereum. I'm still 300% up on it, but everything else is just getting clobbered. I mean, Bitcoin's down from a few months ago. Bitcoin was at 63 grand, and now it's at 30,000. It's lost half of its thing, which, you know, actually, it's, you know, 2 years ago, Bitcoin was somewhere around $8,000. So it's still massively up. It's just for everybody who bought in at like 45, 50, 55, thinking it was going to go to 100 grand, you know, I mean, you're screwed. I mean, some of us bought in even lower than the 31,000 right now. So we're still ahead. But my favorite crypto, Electronium, also is down 32%, which, you know, I've got so much of that. If that just hit like 50 cents a pop, I would be like set for life. But It's been getting killed. But, you know, the thing about investing is you always buy the dip. So everything's always down, you buy. Because it's going to go back up. And you just, and people get emotionally invested in their investments, and they get crazy. And it's like, oh, I got to get out now. You know, you hold. Like I'm pulling up my Roth IRA right now. I use Charles Schwab. Great company, by the way. Highly recommend them. The app is fantastic. My Roth IRA is still up, like, massively. I'm up quite a bit. What's my percentage I'm up for? Okay, I'm still up 22%. Overall, my Roth IRA since I opened it, which was about a year or so ago. So 22% for a year, I mean, you know, it's not bad. My Nokia is up. My ETFs are up quite a bit. My mutual funds are all up except one, and my one select income fund is down 5%, but it's steady. I get steady passive income from that per month, and it never goes down more than 5% anyway. It fluctuates. It's a very stable, you know, and it pays a dividend every month like clockwork. Hasn't missed a dividend payment in 15 years, and you know, it's good to know it's there. And it's dependable. And sometimes when you invest, and especially if you want something that's going to pay you dividends every month, you want something dependable. I mean, do you want something that's going to pay you a dividend 1 month of like, you know, $500 and the next 3 months nothing, and then another one that pays 500? Or do you want one that every month, religiously, it pays you anywhere from 100, from 80 to 100 a month, no matter what? I'd rather have something like that, because then you can count on that. You know, it's not going anywhere. The other ones fluctuate all over the place, and so sometimes it's good to have the volatile funds, but it's also good to have the ones that are very steady and don't really grow, but they don't shrink. They kind of just go in a flat line and just slowly drip their dividends to you reliably every month. They're very safe, very conservative, and you need those to back up the ones that are like, you know, take 20 hits of speed and start running, and you never know what they're going to do. I mean, it's good to have one or two of those, but you should always have something steady. I'd rather have something steady that I know is going to be there every month than something like, well, you know, I'm going to make 3 grand this month, but the next 4 months, I'm probably not going to make anything. Or what I would prefer is, yeah, I know every month I make 500 from this, and then I can forget about it. So I'd rather have that, you know. But so there's this website online called Fiverr. I don't know if you ever heard of it or not. And the idea when Fiverr first came out was you go on there for $5, people hire themselves out for various things. And you gotta remember, this is from when it first started years ago, and the name just stuck. And the idea was is okay, you know, I'm a proofreader. And for $5, send me your stuff and I'll proofread it and send it back to you all corrected, and you send me $5. Now, that was the idea in the beginning. And then Fiverr took off. There's a lot of people on it. It grew and it grew and it grew. And it branched out from just proofreading to everything from voiceover work to animation to video production to background vocals. And it's no longer $5. I mean, there's people on there charging a couple $100 now. And there's all different categories. Promotion's a big thing with Fiverr. You know, as far as promoting your book, promoting your YouTube channel, your Instagram. So I paid, you know, I'm trying to grow my viewership here, and they have a whole podcasting promotion category on Fiverr. And there's a guy in there, and he's been on Fiverr forever. He's actually a pro seller, which means he's been verified that he works in the industry. He's not just some guy at a desk saying, yeah, I'll promote your podcast. This guy's been verified. He works in the industry. He's known. His real name is there. You can see him for real, and he'll promote your podcast on. He's got a couple websites that do podcast promotion, and he has agreement. It's kind of complicated, the whole affiliate thing. So, you know, I paid him not much. You know, under $50, and I said, you know, the basic package, and I'm like, give it a shot, and let's see if I get any more of listeners, and I've gotten a few more. He said it takes time; it could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months to see a big gain. He said, but you know, it'll come in drips. He said, as the promotions are out there. And that's kind of how you want to do it. And the other thing is, a lot of people that do promotion work for Fiverr, that do for like your Instagram channel, your YouTube, or your podcast, or your OnlyFans, or your eBooks, they use a lot of bots, and the bots will spam other people's accounts saying, "Hey, I just read this great eBook by Fred Goldstein Shuffleberger-Vitz, you know, how to make $1 million, and you should check it out." And they'll spam it. And that's bad, because at least with me, if I see someone like that, I purposely avoid ever buying a person's product because I get angry. But this guy who I hired on Fiverr doesn't do that. He doesn't use bots. It's real promotion. He sits there at his computer and, you know, he, with his people at his promotion thing, agency, I don't know what you want to call it. And they do the actual legwork to promote it. And there's no bots, you know, so there's no spamming. Which is how you want to do things like this, because you don't want to spam people. Because, like, if, put it this way, you get the mail, and you get spam mail. Oh, you've been approved for a $30,000 line of credit from this company. Just sign. I throw shit like that out. I don't want to see anything like that. And you get them all the time from all these different, I mean, even Visa and Citibank send stuff like that out. And they're like, here's this, you're pre-approved for this, and you keep getting over and over, like, Valpak. You know, I don't want all these coupons. What do you waste? They're killing trees. They're killing trees, sending me spam for coupons that I don't need. I just throw that shit out. I'm just like, I don't need this. And, you know, that's horrible. You know, and it doesn't work. I don't care what people say. You know, that sort of spam advertising, it doesn't work in the real world because people get angry at it. But if I get something personalized and targeted, and I only get it once, I am more apt to open it up and read it and consider it. Like, trying to think, what was the last thing I got? Oh, I got this promotional thing in the mail from a company that does this one supplement I take. And, you know, I buy it directly from their website, and I actually got a letter, and this letter was handwritten by this company, and it was, hey, you know, you've marketing department noticed you've been a loyal customer for a couple of years, and just figured we want to let you know we have this new supplement coming out that is the same as the one you're taking now, but it's got an additional supplement that we've combined with it. So now instead of buying two bottles, you know, you can buy one bottle. It's got both supplements in it and it's the same price. And here's a little packet with a couple of supplements in it for you to try. And it was a handwritten letter. It was something I was interested in because I was already buying this product. And I'm like, okay, let me try this. And I end up, and that's what I buy now, is that new, it's the same supplement I took before, but combined with another one. And the supplement I was taking was like $10 a bottle. It would last me 2 months. The other supplement was $10 a bottle and lasted a month. They combined them. And now it's, the two supplements are now in one tablet. $10 will take me 2 months. So they didn't raise the price, and I'm getting the other supplement combined with the one I always take. And it was a handwritten letter, signed everything, and, you know, that's how you do marketing. And they, and, you know, now, even though they're not making any more money off me because the product's the same price, now, if they have something new, and they send me a letter that says, hey, you know, we've got this totally new product that, you know, you haven't been buying, but check it out. There's a very good chance, I'm not saying I would do it, but if it's something I think would benefit me, I'd buy it. Because of how they conducted their marketing. It was specifically targeted, and I feel bad for the poor secretary or whoever had a, I'm assuming I'm not the only one that got this letter. They must have sent it to thousands of people, and, you know, it's definitely handwritten, so maybe they have a printer that can simulate it, but this thing was handwritten. And so not only did they increase my loyalty, they increased the chances of me buying more stuff from them that I wasn't buying before. That's how you do it. Here's another story. Years ago, I had written a letter to the Maserati company. You know, Maserati is sports cars. And it was just entailing the results of an accident in a Maserati vehicle. And I said, you know, the car was so well built that despite getting hit and flipping, there are no injuries at all. Walked away unscratched. And I wrote it to him. I said, I just wanted to let you know this. And I said, the quality of your product is very, very high. I wanted you to know that, you know, I have a feeling that other cars in this situation, there would have been deaths or serious injury involved. And I said, just you should let your workers in your factory know that all their hard work to build these vehicles and that the time they put in and, you know, the overtime or whatever they do, the hard work, I said, it does not go unnoticed. It is appreciated and it is at least, it saved at least one person's life. And I sent them the letter and I got a handwritten letter back from, I have the letter, like, you know, preserved. And I got a handwritten letter back from, I think it was the head engineer of Maserati in Italy, thanking me for the letter, telling me that he made a copy of the letter and read it to the factory workers, and, you know, stressing, you know, this is the situation, this is what happened, blah, 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 like I had said. They sent me a very, very expensive, high-detailed model of a Maserati Quattroporte, which is like my favorite Maserati car. It's a four-door Ferrari, basically. Not only that, but in the letter, he said that when it is time for you to, you know, purchase a Quattroporte, he said, I want you to take this letter to any Maserati dealer in the United States and show this to them. They will call this number here on the bottom to verify that this letter that you're showing them is genuine. He said, it is in our records. It will be in our records permanently that we did this. He said, at which point your Quattroporte will cost about 25% less than factory invoice. Which basically means that if this Quattroporte was 100,000 retail and factory invoice was 70, I could buy it for about 50. Not that I'm in a position to buy a Maserati Quattroporte, but there's no time limit on this thing. And you see, that's the type of marketing, that's the type of thing that makes somebody a loyal customer, that makes the brand loyalty, not getting tons of spam from like Valpak or some car dealership sending you a key saying, oh, you know, this key may open a brand new Chevy Trax. Come on down to Lester Fred's Chevy dealer and try it out. No, shit like that doesn't work. Stuff like the supplement, stuff like the Maserati, that type of advertising, that type of engagement with your customer base works. And that's why I did this Fiverr thing, because, you know, he doesn't do bots. It's live people interaction. And you see, that's why I don't, there's a lot of podcasters who I've noticed on Reddit and other places where podcasters gather who spam their podcasts, who are basically begging for viewers. Oh, you should listen in, you should do this, you should do that, blah, blah, blah. And I know I always go into my spiel of, oh, you know, you should be sending me money, you know, click the support button, which you should be. But I know I rail on about that, but I'm never going to jump on Reddit or some other place where podcasters gather to talk about their work and spam the hell out of my show. I'm just not going to do it because I know if I saw something like that, I wouldn't listen. because it would just annoy me. And I've seen people spam over. I mean, different. They'll come in different accounts, and they'll be so untransparent. Like, you'll get one guy saying, "Oh, I listened to Fred Schuckelberg's podcast about the banking system. It was great. You should all check it out at FredSchuckelbergsPodcast.com. And, you know, they'll spam it and they'll get banned. 2 days later, some totally different account shows up and go, "You know what's really great? Fred Schuckelberg's podcast about, you know, the banking industry. And I checked it out." I mean, they're making it so obvious it's them. But it's like the McDonald's strategy. It's quantity over quality. You throw enough of it at the wall, something's going to stick. See, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to spam. I don't have a website for my podcasts for a couple reasons. You know, maybe I should eventually, but I'm not going to be sending out emails. I'm not going to be plastering posters everywhere. I'm not going to be posting online everywhere, spamming people to listen. You know, every time I do a podcast, I put it up on Facebook, I put it up on Instagram, and I put it up on Twitter. And if people, you know, I use the right hashtags for people who are looking for podcasts, and I leave it at that. And I try to interact with people if they ask me something or whatever. But I don't start jumping around trying to push my podcast on everybody's throat, because nobody's going to listen. Something permanent does not come overnight. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And sometimes it takes a long time to slow burn into something that is going to have a stable audience. Now, I've read about podcasters who will have 50,000 unique listeners, you know, over 6 months, and then a year later, they're down to a couple hundred. Yeah, I want to have a, just like my one fund I have, I want slow, steady, reliable. When I build a stable audience, I don't want it to go down. If it goes up, great, but if it holds steady, that's kind of like what I'm looking for. Because that's what wins the race. Slow and steady always wins the race. I mean, turtle and a hare. Then, you know, the hare ran out of gas and the turtle beat him. Thrilla and Manila. Ollie stands there and lets Foreman punch himself out, and then Ollie just outlasts him and puts him on his ass. That's how you do it. It's the same thing in podcasts, same thing in life. Just be patient, go at your own pace, and eventually you get to your goal. Simple as that. So, that's it for this week. We're trying a quicker format than usual. I'm trying to cut down the time. Not just because I can't talk for an hour, which I can, but I read somewhere that hour-long podcasts are more suited to people who have, like, more guests and things going on than somebody who's just one person. So I'm going to try to slowly bring the time down a bit. So there you go. So, thank you for everybody for listening. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on great podcasting hosts like Anchor FM, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, and a whole bunch of other podcasting platforms. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just type in Victims of Fun and you'll see the logo with the Blue Yeti microphone. Hit that support button and send me some cash. I'd really appreciate some money. And other than that, I hope you all have a nice time. And I'll see you again in a couple days. God bless. And remember to love each other, because this is one world, one family. Good night, everybody. Or goodbye, or good day, depending on where you are.